The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, good morning. I want to talk to you today about a topic that is very close to my heart, that I find very fruitful. And perhaps it's because I grew up with a parent who was not terribly skillful with it. And that's the topic of energy. The ability to know how to regulate your own energy, how to be with your changing energy. The image that I get with this work around energy and mindfulness is that of a scientist in a lab, where you can very carefully tweak it, adding a little bit of this, a little less of that, and regulating really very precisely. As we get more and more skillful with our practice, we become more refined in the ability to make our energy just right for the moment, just right for the task at hand. Energy as a topic within the Dharma is important enough that it is one of the seven factors of enlightenment. It has a third place of the seven factors. And just very briefly to give you the context of the seven factors so you know how it fits within the seven. We begin with the first one, with mindfulness, which is, as we know, this awareness of being able to be in the present moment, just being open, non-judging, accepting what arises. If we really want to find out what is happening in the moment, then we want to investigate, and that's the second factor. So we bring this inquiring mind into what's happening in the present moment. And when we inquire, it is very natural for energy to arise. I think we all have had that experience when we are deeply engaged in something, and you just feel this very pleasant sense of energy arising. And in fact, it's so pleasant that it is very natural from this energy then for joy to arise. You know, this sense of vitality gives way to joy. Joy then is a very, very pleasant state. But if we look at it carefully, it still has a little bit of kind of activity in the mind I visualize it like something vibrating inside the mind. And so at some point that becomes tiring and we yearn to move to an even more pleasant state, which is tranquility. And tranquility gives us a very quiet kind of a happiness that is very, very pleasant. From this tranquil mind, our mind is then ready to begin unifying the mind, which is concentration, which is the factor that follows, the penultimate factor. So if you think of concentration, I'd love just what the term really means is to gather in a point, in a central point, that which is strewn apart. You bring it together into the center. And that's concentration. That's what we do with our mind. So we unify it. And within this concentration, with all of us, all of our different parts, unified in this century, in the center, comes the last and most sublime of the states, and that's tranquility. That's this evenness of states of our emotions, etc. So it's just this very beautiful, equanimous state. So you see then energy then as the third one. In order for it to give way to joy, it has to have a certain ease in it. It has to be effortless effort so that it really flows into joy. If we want to bring energy in a forced way, we break that beautiful natural cycle of the seven factors of enlightenment, then joy doesn't arise. So we need it. We have to let it arise in a soft way. So I like to consider the Pali term for energy, because as most of you know, when you look at the Pali term, it's like looking at a diamond with all these different facets. The terms in Pali often have quite a few facets, and in order for us to find the equivalent in English, we have to use quite a few words. So virya, which is the term we use in Pali, can have the meaning of energy, effort, strength, vigor, courage, and persistence. So then you see, now it's almost like energy becomes like this fan that you open, and now it has all these different qualities to it. So as we investigate a little bit of the role of energy, first in general in our lives, we can see that really wide ramifications that it has if we are not skillful with it. Knowing how to manage our energy makes us very considerate with people that we live with. So think for a moment, how do we respond when our energy is low? Do we get despondent? Do we get depressed? Do we get moody? Do we get irritable? How do we respond when our energy is very high? Do we get frantic? Do we talk incessantly? Do we move recklessly? So it's a lovely way of, when we bring awareness, it's a lovely way of taking responsibility for our changing states when our energy fluctuates. So it's also useful to investigate how do we respond as far as wanting to do something with the low energy. Do we drink? Do we use drugs? Do we shop because we need to distract ourselves because this is an uncomfortable state? Overeating can also be another way of running away from it. So mindfulness encourages us to investigate and familiarize ourselves with our own particular patterns of energy and befriend them. You know, it's like ask ourselves the question over and over again. In this particular state of or amount of energy that I have, what is the wisest thing that I can do instead of being reactive? So I just want to look a little bit, very, very briefly at the various ways of that energy or virya, that like the different facets. The energy part, to me, suggests like the inner ecology that we all have. How do we care for that inner ecology? It says we can use our energy to be vigilant of this changing energies, and when unskillful mind states begin to arise due to a change of energy that is uncomfortable for us, we can be there, we can be present for it and not reactive. The part about strength, a part is also very important in the sense that we can, as I said before, that we can confuse it with the pushing hard. So learning to bring that soft effort. And then the courage part, the not running away from these states that are really difficult for us. I mean, we don't like to feel lifeless, gray, you know, when it feels like life is gray, when the mind feels dull. It takes courage to not run away from it and be reactive, but just be with it and see what can we learn from it. Can these difficult states be very friendly messengers telling us something that we can learn about that difficult state? And then the persistence part. When we want to keep energy up, we have to bring this constant renewed effort. I love the image that Gill uses for persistence, and that is that if you want to boil water, it won't work if you turn the flame on for 2 minutes and then you turn it off. And then you go do something else. And then you come back and you turn it on again. So in order for the water to boil, the flame has to stay on for a certain amount of time. It's the same thing with our energy, right? We have to really keep our energy going for a certain amount of time in order to get results in our practice, especially in our meditation. And I'd like to pose the question, what is the central cause for energy or virya to arise as a factor of enlightenment? And I think the question that I resonate, or the answer that I resonate most, is spiritual urgency. I was asking myself, what is a good way to communicate this spiritual urgency? What explains spiritual urgency? And I came upon this lovely Zen image. And to imagine that you are climbing a very steep hill, and as you are going up, suddenly your foot slides and you begin to fall. You just manage to grab onto a vine, but you find yourself dangling over an abyss. Now, if that wasn't bad enough, when you look up at this vine you're hanging onto, you see two mice that are gnawing at the vine. So now you know you're in deep water. Now you know that it's just a matter of time when this is going to give. So I like this image because this is really what our life is all about all the time. And the anxiety that we might feel at that time when we're dangling, that is the friendly messenger. I never really thought about that anxiety could be in our lives a friendly messenger. It's the anxiety that is telling us, look, you're trying to make something out of life that it's not. If we can totally accept reality as it is, with its suffering, with its changing nature, with our not constructing the me, the self, then we can actually be okay. Because part of this image that I didn't tell you is that while you're hanging on this vine, you actually see a wild strawberry, and you reach out for it, and you eat it, and it's delicious. And so, to finish, I want to read you a lovely quote from a Zen teacher. Her name is Barbara Verkulian. She says, "The secret in our hearts is that on the deepest level, we already know the truth of our unlikely and precarious existence. Until we fully acknowledge the reality of our situation, we are driven by anxiety and insecurity to make real what cannot be made real, real meaning permanent. The irony is that by fully accepting that we are forever dangling off the edge of the mountain, we gain an attitude of fierce attention that brings us fully alive. It is this shift in how we see and experience our relationship to the world that makes our life delicious. And that's the strawberry." So I wish for you that your life is delicious and that you can apply virya for the purpose of freedom. Thank you.